Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Right Now Weekly Radio Show, hosted by Vicki Winterton, founder of Expert Insights Publishing, home of best-selling books, award-winning magazines, global broadcasts, and communities. Right Now is a highly educational, inspiring, and empowering show focused on writing, publishing, and marketing your books, featuring outstanding guests from across the globe, including best-selling authors, world stage speakers, thought leaders, and visionaries with proven strategies, secret formulas, and treasured resources to help you succeed and make an impact. Welcome, sit back, and enjoy the show. And now your host, Vicki Winterton.
Hi, this is Vicki Winterton, and I'm so thrilled because today, coming to us from Australia, we have Pip McKay. Pip is a pioneer within the field of personal development and NLP. She is an exceptional speaker, best-selling author, and extraordinary personal coach. Her style is interactive, fun, profound, intuitive, entertaining, and informative. And she's going to talk to us about her latest bestseller, Four Tribes, One Earth. Pip, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much, Vicki. It's lovely to be here.
So, Pip, tell us a little bit, for those that haven't had a chance to meet you, a little bit about how you came to your passion and purpose in life, which is extraordinary contribution across the world.
Thank you. Yes, well, you know, it's interesting because my mum always said, do what you love and the money will come. And so I just pursued what I loved in life. And early on, that was acting. So I was really attracted to being on the stage and dressing up and telling stories. And so I pursued that. But as I got into that more professionally, I started to realize that I didn't really enjoy people telling me what to do. And I also wanted to be more creative and write my own scripts. So that really kind of led me to having all the performance of acting by speaking, being a speaker, and then also all the creativity of, you know, writing my own speeches, but also writing books. So that's really how I came to it. I really wanted to be able to express my own ideas and my own creativity. And I also had quite a lot of problems in my early childhood with abuse and other things. And I wanted to be able to help people heal just the way that I had and give people more inspiration about how they could overcome their problems in life.
Oh, that is so beautiful. Really, what a wonderful incentive and goal. So tell us a little bit about your latest book, because you're really a prolific writer and you've had bestseller, and I'd love to hear a little bit about the most recent book.
Well, this book's called Four Tribes, One Earth. And it's a parable of communication and love. So I've been a coach for 17 years. And one of the things that I've seen between relationships and in friendships and also professionally is that a lot of conflict and unhappiness between people is actually a lack of communication skills, a lack of understanding of each other's point of view. And so often when people can communicate in a way that somebody else can understand, then a lot of conflict just disappears. And in NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming, which is a form of personal development that I taught for a long time, there's particular communication styles. And so I thought, wouldn't it be great if those styles could be written in a book where you saw one chapter from one person's point of view with one communication style, and then it switched over and you saw the same situation from somebody else's point of view from their communication style, and it went back and forth, and you started to see that as they fell in love and did their best to understand each other, they were able to adjust their communication styles, and their life and their experience of the world could be richer as they started to see things from another point of view. And so that's really what the book is about. And, you know, this is something I feel very passionately about, that our differences can become our strengths in relationship rather than points of conflict.
Oh, I love that. And, you know, never have we needed this more than we need it now. So for people who are having maybe some conflicts and some challenges in communication, can you give some tips that maybe you cover in the book about how that can be accomplished both in your interpersonal relationship and with the world?
Yeah, sure. Well, it comes down to these four communication styles. So some people are visual communicators, so they're talking about the pictures they see in their head and then noticing what they see in their world. And then there's kinesthetic communicators, so these people communicate what they feel inside their body, their emotions, and they experience the world through touch and through the connections they have with others. Then there's auditory people. These are people who take most notice of what they hear, and they also have a lot of self-talk inside their head. And then there's audio-digital people, and these people take most notice of facts and figures and the way they can calculate inside their mind. So when somebody is talking about their feelings to somebody who is a visual communicator, that visual communicator might not be able to get a picture in their head of what the person's saying. And so then they might feel frustrated, and they might feel like the other person is talking about a lot of touchy-feely stuff that they can't understand. Whereas the feeling person might feel like the other person's just very surfacey and interested in what they see and how people look. And then there can be a lot of judgments about those two communication styles, as each person thinks that their communication style is the best and that they're right. Whereas if we can start to understand, oh, this person communicates through what they feel and touch, well, do you know what? I might touch them before I speak to them, and I might use some feeling words like, you know, do you get a grasp of that or a hold of that, or do you feel what I mean? And then if it's a visual communicator, I might go, all right, this person can't get a picture in their head of what I'm saying, so I'm going to paint a picture with my words. I'm going to describe how this might look, or I'm going to draw a diagram for them so that they can understand it and they can see what I'm talking about. And I'm going to say things like, can you picture that? Can you see what I mean? And then just these little words really can help. And then we stop thinking about what's right and wrong, and we start to be curious about the other person's point of view and see if we can adjust ourselves to communicate in a way that will fulfill their needs.
Oh, I think that's wonderful. And I myself have experienced that in ways where it's been incredibly powerful. So what do you think about the concept of people, rather than communicating, if they're the ones that want to initiate the communication and be heard, what do you think is a real tool for them to shift from communicating in their normal, comfortable way to being able to adjust to their audience? And how can they tell what that audience is? Like, if you're talking with an individual, how can you tell if they're, you know, kinesthetic or visual or, you know, in their heads?
Well, you know, there's also a lot of physicality that goes along with this as well. So visual people, which in the book I call the visual person the tribe that sees and has visions. And so each one of the four tribes is the four communication styles. And the visual people tend to sit up because they want to see as much as they can, and they tend to speak quickly because a picture says 1,000 words. Whereas a kinesthetic person, which in the book I call the tribe that feels and is touched, they tend to be much more laid back in the way that they sit. They tend to speak more slowly, more pauses, because when you're getting in touch with your feelings and then you're putting that into words, that takes a little bit of time. And then auditory people tend to have their head on their side. I call them the tribe that listens and sings in the book. They have their head on their side. They tend to speak more melodiously and with a lot more variety in their voice. And audio-digital people, I call them the tribe that thinks and calculates. They tend to speak more in a monotone, and they're just sort of giving factual information, and they just seem to be speaking more in that monotone voice. So in that way, it becomes easy enough to see what the communication style is. But I also think, too, if you're talking to an audience, it's great to start to use all of the different communication styles and having variety in your speech. I think, though, in the end, it's an attitude, and that attitude is that my communication style isn't who I am. It's just a vehicle for me expressing myself. And considering that communication is commune, that means two people, that communication isn't just about us speaking, it's about how the other person is going to hear and understand what we're saying. So with this attitude of me changing my communication style doesn't change who I am. I'm still the same person. It's just that I've chosen a different vehicle. Just like you're still the same person if you're driving a Volkswagen as if you're driving a Volvo or a Ford, or, you know, I mean, that might express something different about you if you're in a Maserati than if you're in a Ford, but you don't actually change who you are as a person when you get into a different car. And this is the same with the vehicle that we choose to communicate with others. And so it's actually fun to have different experiences by sort of seeing the world in different ways. And I always say to my speakers when I'm teaching them how to become speakers, you know, just spend a day looking at the world through your eyes and really taking notice of visual information. Then spend a day really getting in touch with your feelings and how other people feel. Then spend a day listening, you know, and then spend a day, you know, calculating things and thinking about things, and start to experience the world from different points of view, and you'll just find your whole life enriched, and it becomes easier then to adjust when you've got an audience and adjusting your speech at different times for your audience.
That is so beautiful. And what occurs to me, and I know we've talked before and we've talked together about the fact that, you know, it's a much more external focus than internal focus. And I think, you know, I find for myself that if I get nervous about a presentation, and I think sometimes if you're getting in front of a huge number of people on stage, a little bit of butterflies and the idea that you really want to do well is a good thing. But if you're externally focused about the information going out as opposed to internally focused about what you're going to say, this comes more natural to you, as I think speaking does.
Absolutely. I think that's so beautiful. You know, I say to people, if we didn't really want the other person to understand what we were saying, we wouldn't open our mouth in the first place. You know, the moment we open our mouth and we're not having the thought internally, we are wanting to share with somebody else. So it's important to share in a way that they can understand. You know, just like if you had a loved one, you'd want to give them a gift that they actually enjoy rather than just a gift you want to give them. So I think, you know, this sort of external focus, like you're saying, when we're speaking, just to remember that speaking is a gift, and we want that gift to be wrapped in a way that is going to intrigue and draw somebody to that information.
Oh, yeah. It's so important, and it's such a powerful, powerful tool. So when you look at this wonderful book that you've written, what would you like people, the readers, to take away from that?
Well, I really think that sometimes when we fall in love with somebody, we have expectations of who we want them to be. And sometimes those expectations make us more judgmental and harder on the people that we love the most. When in actual fact, when we love someone, what we want to be able to do is start to really be curious about who they are and understand all their quirky anomalies and the way that they show up in the world, and to have real compassion for that, and that this is really what love is about. And it's really important that we're extending this compassion to the people who are closest to us, rather than reserving that compassion for people we hardly know or people at work. And so I think this idea that differences can enrich us, and that differences can be part of what empowers us and what makes relationships interesting, and that we want to embrace differences, that's really what I'd like people to take away from the book.
Oh, that is so beautiful. I wanted to share something with you that was a personal experience, that your information is, again, so powerful and so empowering. when I was studying some of these principles that you outline so beautifully in the book and go into detail about how people can master this, I had a presentation for a really sizable contract, and at that time I was doing a lot of work within the medical community. And usually the doctors that we would work with would be very visual, but there were 13 doctors, I think it was 13, that had to all make the decision unanimously, and there was one person in there that was kinesthetic or a real feeling person. And we were able to go in and include him in a way that drew that into 100% a decision making in the positive for us. That was a 2-year contract that was really, really beneficial. So it is so incredibly powerful, and I've experienced myself. And then to continue on with that and understand that when you're communicating with that one person, they're going to communicate ongoing for the 2 years we had the contract differently than everyone else, you know, that we're partners with them. It was just such a lovely way to be able to create tremendous success for the company, for all the doctors individually, and have him be able to participate in that success right from the decision. So I just wanted to share that.
Absolutely. Because I think it's beautiful, because in actual fact, that one person who in another circumstance or in another group would be seen as kind of like the troublemaker or the person who's different, in actual fact, his communication style would have added another dimension to the project that wouldn't have been embraced otherwise.
Absolutely. So I hope you don't mind. I just wanted to share that because that's a powerful experience that I call on all the time to make sure that I am being responsible for being heard when I'm addressing someone. You know, I really believe that is the responsibility lies on the person wanting to communicate that they are heard.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that experience, Vicky, because what I love is that it's through storytelling that we start to understand how important communication styles are. And that's really why I wanted to put the communication styles into a story, so that people could really get an experience of that inside their body. So in each chapter, like the chapter starts off with wind in her hair and her father wants her to marry Bright Eagle, and they come from two different tribes. And she's very, very kinesthetic, and she comes from a tribe which is very kinesthetic. And then Bright Eagle comes from the tribe that sees and has vision, so he's very visual. And when I write the chapter from Wind in Her Hair's point of view, it's all about feeling, and you see the whole world as a feeling, experiential world. And then the next chapter's from the point of view of Bright Eagle, and in that chapter, the whole chapter's written from a visual point of view. So suddenly you see the world as a visual person does, and you start to see what annoys them about each other from each other's point of view. But as they fall in love, they're able to start to adjust and see the advantages of each communication style. And so I think story is such a powerful way of understanding this. And from what I know in the NLP world that I've been in, it's never really been written into a story form. It's really just been information. So I think story is so powerful and such a powerful way of expressing these sort of differences and seeing it as a parable.
Yeah, that is so lovely. And just part of what I love about your book and the way it's presented, it's so unique. The information comes so easily that way when it's shared in a story form. Really beautiful. So if you were to look at the work that you're doing with your clients and with this book that will, like your other book, travel all over the world and really be a wealth of information and learning for people, what would you like to see if you were to look at it like a legacy? How would you like to see that impact the world?
Well, you know, one of the things that inspires me to write is the problems that people experience. And, you know, it's really interesting because in personal development, this word problem has sort of been shoved to one side and the word challenge has been used to replace it. But in actual fact, from ancient Greece, the word problem means to throw forth a question for which you know there is an answer. And just like a mathematical problem, 1 + 1 = And then, you know, that's the problem thrown forth for which you know there's an answer. And one of the things that I find really inspiring is this concept that problems are a quest, a question that is waiting to be answered, and that problems really help us grow. And that it's from all the problems that any of us have ever experienced, it's from those that we evolve, and it's from those that we are creative. And so I think in my body of work, what inspires me is people's problems and knowing that there must be an answer if we are just curious enough, if we just delve deeply enough, and if we're just creative enough and have an attitude of curiosity. And, you know, that's the same with this book. They have their problems, and those problems make those people evolve, become deeper, more profound, more interesting people, as the mask of personality and habit of communication drops and we start to see the humanity underneath the mask. And for me, my greatest desire for the world and through all of my work is that our humanity is the most important, most extraordinary, most wonderful part of ourselves. And that's what we want to share with the world, even if it makes us feel vulnerable. That's where all our growth comes from. And that if I can inspire people to be able to drop the mask of personality and embrace humanity in ourselves and others, well, that would be the greatest legacy ever. And I realize that that's probably a legacy that will be going ongoing with many millions of people contributing to that concept. But that's very much a part of a movement that I feel inspired by and I want to be a part of and I want to pioneer.
Oh, I love that. I really, really love that. And I love the analogy of a problem being a question. I tend to shy away from that word, you know, and it's just a matter of restructuring what that word means within your being. That's beautiful, beautiful. So what is next on the agenda for PET?
Oh, well, you know, obviously we have all our courses. One of the courses that I run is with horses, and we do horse whispering as part of our personal development. So that's there. And then after that, I'm going to write my next book after this one is going to be all about archetypes. So I've already written that, most of that book, so it needs a lot of editing, but it's really all about this archetypal concept of who we are and that we identify with certain roles in the world and how can we become the best example of that role. So, for instance, it might be the knight that wants to go out there and make things happen and be on a quest for the Holy Grail, or it might be the creative nurturer, which is more of a mother archetype. And we look at people having a combination of these archetypes that form their soul's code, and their purpose in life is to express these archetypes in the world. And one of the things I'm really passionate about is our human quest for the mythic, you know, and I think this is why we're so attracted to things like Game of Thrones or Harry Potter or these more fantasy Narnia books and concepts, is because we search for this mythic concept of who we are as the hero in our own life on a quest for what makes our life meaningful and purposeful. And so this is what I'm onto next, and that's the greatest body of my work is based on this idea and how we can open the door of the cupboard to Narnia and find ourselves in a world that has greater meaning, passion and purpose. And that's very much the core aspect of my work. And, yeah, so that's what I'm looking forward to next.
Oh, how beautiful is that? Pip, thank you so much for being with us today. And do you have a website where people could go to be able to connect with you? I know your books are available on Amazon, but is there a URL you could share?
Yes, there is. So it's www.pipmckay.com.au. So it's just my name, my first and last name. And on there, there's lots of videos. In fact, the book is going to be called Once Upon an Archetype, that I was just talking about. I actually videoed every single day of me writing that book. So I wrote that book in 40 days, and there's actually a video tracking every single day that I wrote that book and the hero's journey I went on when I was writing that book. So, yeah, there's lots of information and videos and webinars and lots of free resources and TV show that I created as well. So there's a lot of tremendous resources on there. So really, yeah, we'll welcome everybody to be on there.
Oh, Kip, thank you so much for your generosity of time and information today and these wonderful gifts you have on the web. And I want to point out to all of those listening, and a lot of those listening will be writers or those that aspire to be writers and authors of books, that going through this process with Kip would be a wonderful way to have encouragement and understand processing your book. So don't overlook that. The information, I'm sure, is phenomenal, but also the process of actually seeing a writer go through writing a book in 40 days is like an amazing gift. So, Pip, thank you so much.
Yeah, that's my pleasure, Vicki.
Thank you all for being here. And if you would like to learn more about Expert Insights Publishing, our best-selling books, award-winning magazines, our global broadcast and communities, you can find us at getei.com. That's G-E-T-E-I.com. And everyone have a wonderful week.